Today's shiur is Masech, the Baba Basra, Daf Pei Zayin. We will begin Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach on Daf Pei Vav Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom. In our previous shiur, the Gemara had brought the halacha of Rav and Shmuel, who differentiated when a sale was taking place, how the wording of the sale was said. Meaning, if there was a whole unit being sold, then the halacha, the Gemara said, was that until the entire unit is delivered into the keli in which we will have the sale is not considered consummated. On the other hand, in a situation where the sale is identified by one large lot, but also each unit separately, then each unit separately, we have a valid sale, even though we have a valid sale for each unit separately, even though we haven't delivered the entire lot. So says the Gemara Tashma, the Brisa speaks about a case of Hasaychas Apoyal, somebody hires a worker, Lasasimai Lagairin, that this worker will work with him during the time where they collect the grain from the field. And he said, Hayoyim Bediner, he's going to say, that, so that's during that time where that work is usually done, is in the time of Nisan. And he's being hired, which is in the spring, he's being hired much earlier in the season, and he's being told that I will pay you, that time is Sukkot time, he's being hired Nisan time, and he says, I'm going to give you a dinner a day for 30 days that you will work for me during the season. Well, the Gairin, but if he were to hire him in the time where the work is actually done, that means, as we said, Sukkot time, at that time, the typical salary you pay for such work is Yafa Sela. You pay a Sela a day, which is four times a dinner. Osir Lahanas Mimenu. So as we have learned, and we'll learn many other times in Mitzvah Shem, this is considered a situation of ribbis. Because he's paying him early in order to, he's paying him earlier in order that he should be, hold on to the money. And as we've learned, that's called agat noter, that he's paying for the use of the money, and that the worker is willing to take less now, even though, because he should have the money in hand, even though he'll only be working later. If he started working with him from today, and even though when the season, when he's going to actually do the work, it's yoful sela, it's going to be, the work is worth more mutter. Ask the Gemara how we connect Hilchas Ribbis to these, to this sugya. Says the Ravis Akadatach, if we're going to say kar b'shloishim, when we have a situation of kar b'shloishim, mei b'selani meichelach, that when it's sold in that way, rishirishin kanam, that we look at each unit separately, hachinami. So even in the case where he started working with him from today, every day is a separate day. Kama kama mifsik basik. Every day is a separate day. Since every day is separate day, so mad. Why, if he started paying him from today, and then we understand that the reason he got this disc, the worker is getting less is because he got the money earlier, why would it be mutter? Isn't this a classical case of agonater, where the person is willing to take less in order to hold on to the money? So the person who's hiring him is getting a discount because he gave him the money up front. So I'm lending you the money and I'm getting a discount. That's agonater, says the Gemara. Amar Rav v'tizbara v'zuzuzi b'schiris mi'asar. So ask the Gemara, I don't understand what your question is. If somebody is willing to work for less, is that not mutter? Of course, a worker could take less, paid than other people if he's desperate for the job. So why would we suggest that just because you took less, it's considered ribbis? And that's why the Gemara says it's not considered ribbis. Says the Gemara, but ask that Gemara, Maishna Resha Maishna Seifa, why if he's not going to begin working until the season, we said that's a case of Aganatar. And why if he begins working now, it's not Aganatar? Answers the Gemara, Resha Dolakova Be Mahashta, if you're not beginning to work till later, so Mach Mechsi, it looks like you're willing to take less because of Aganatale. Sefer, the Ka'avad Hadei Mahashta, but the Sefer where you begin working now already, like Mechsikadu Natale, it doesn't look like Aganatar. So in other words, what the Gemara is saying is, this is the way I sort of Rishonim explain the Gemara. Here, there's a few factors to take into consideration. Number one, it's never really a situation of real ribbis. Because as we learned Masechta Baba Metzia, Parag Ezu Neshech, real ribbis is only in a situation of a halva, of a loan. Here it's not a loan. It's a person who's agreeing to work. So it's not a real ribbis. Just what is the concern? Mexica ribbis. So when do we have a situation of Mexica ribbis? When he's not beginning to work at all at this point. But if he's beginning to work at this point, then there is no, then it's not Aganatar. And I asked Sora to Rishonim actually add another factor to this conversation. And that is, not only is it not alone, but as when we learned Masechta Bava Metzia, we saw that there's many situations of ribbis, the Mecha Chumemka, when there's a sale going on. But here it's not even a sale. It's just hiring him for a worker. And moreover, the Ritva says a very interesting point. The Ritva says that the entire discussion in our Gemara is, as we also learned in Masechta Bava Metzia, is because he has a right to walk out of the job. If he didn't have a right to walk out of the job, even if he hasn't begun working yet, that's why that also would not be considered a situation of Aganatar. It's only in a case where he was hired to work from today, and he hasn't begun working today yet, and he can walk out from that contract. That's the only case. It's a situation of Aganatar. And that's why, says the Machnafrayim, if somebody hires a worker and he's a generous employer and he pays the employee already at the beginning of the day for what he's going to work during the duration of the day, it's not considered ribbis. And the reason it's not going to be considered ribbis is because he's hiring him to work, and he is beginning to work. And whenever he begins to work, it's not going to be a situation of ribbis. And in fact, I saw that the Sefer Atta LeMoshel brings two cases of somebody, of shuls who hired chazanim. And the chazanim are particularly needed during Tishrei time, during the Yom Ha'Ra'im time. But one was paid already from, one was hired from Pesach. They both were hired from Pesach. One began already paying him from Pesach time. And one, the shul told him that he has to start, he's already considered the chazan of the shul from now, Pesach time, even though they really need him only for the Yom Ha'Ra'im. So if somebody was hired for an entire year, even though the amount of time that he's working during the year is very minimal, but then it's going to be mutter. But in the case where he was hired Pesach time, was hired earlier in the year, and he's not really going to do any work until the Yom Ha'Ra'im, but they paid him already when they hired him, that would be what we just learned is a case of Aganatar. We learned in the Mishnah that if somebody buys linen, if it was mechub b'karka, the talish kol shehu, if the linen was mechub b'karka and he took off any of the linen from the ground, kana, we learned in the Mishnah that's a valid kinyan. Ask the Gemara. Mishum the Talish Kosher, because he took off a little linen from the ground, Kana, that's how he becomes the owner of that linen. Answers the Gemara. I'm Rav Shesh Shachem Ma'eskinen. The way we need to understand the Mishnah, the Amale, Lech Yapeli Karka Koshu. He did a Kinyan Chazaka on the Karka, and he did a Kinyan Chazaka on the Karka that has on it linen. The way he did the Kinyan Chazaka is that he removed some of the linen from the ground. So that's how he made the property, made the land more suitable for working on it. Since this is considered an act of kinyan on the karka, since it's considered an act of kinyan of a karka, that's why, kani mashallah, you have enough to be able to make a kinyan on all the pishtin. So the Rishonim explain that why is this going to be a valid kinyan? We don't buy pishtin by doing a maisa chazaka. So Rashban says that we're speaking about a case that the pishtin is obviously still connected to the karka. And since the pishtin is still connected to the karka, by doing a kinyan on the karka, you could also make a kinyan on the pishtin. And the Rabban explains, it's only going to be valid, therefore, if the pishtin still needs to be connected to the karka. So if the pishtin still needs to be connected to the karka, doing a kinyan on the karka is equivalent to doing a kinyan on the pishtin. Taisus has a different approach to this Gemara. Taisus' approach to the Gemara is that what the seller is telling the buyer, that you will do a kinyan on the karka. By doing a kinyan on the karka, even though he's not selling him the karka, it's enough to create that you have ownership in the karka that you can be doing a kinyan chazaka. And as we've learned many times, if you do a kinyan on the chatzar, so then it'll work on the what's on the chatzar as well. Others say it's not necessarily going to be considered a kinyan chatzar. They view it as a kinyan agav. That agav the karka, you become the owner of the pishtin. And the chiddush of this gemara is that we would think that it would only be valid if you're going to have ownership in the karka. Teaches us the Gemara that even though you will not have any ownership in the karka, it's still a valid kinyan for the pishtun that's connected to the karka. It says the Mishnah, HaMoicha Yayin, V'shem, if somebody sells wine or oil, L'chaveroi, V'hukra, and they go up in price after they had agreed on a price, or Shehuzla, or they go down in price. Imachlein, smal amida, and truthfully, the Rishonim say there doesn't have to be a reason. The point of our Mishnah is to teach us that when is the kinyan considered a kinyan? That the point is until Achlein Smal Amida, before the vessel in which they're pouring the wine or the oil is filled up, it's not considered that we have a kinyan. And since it's not considered that we have a kinyan, L'maicher, it's still considered the property of the buyer, of the seller, and he could back out. Mishnah smal amida, but once the vessel is filled up, then it's considered already the buyer's, and it's considered the buyer's. And the point of the Mishnah is that until the kinyan is complete, either party can walk out. And as I say, that many Rishonim say that even though the Mishnah spoke about a case where it went down or up in value, and that's where they want to back out, that's only because that's the typical case where they want to back out. But truthfully, those Rishonim learn, you could back out because there was no kinyan. But there are Rishonim that suggest that if only when there's a reason to back out, may you back out. It goes back to something that we learned also, Masechta Baba Metzia, that if person, even though it doesn't have a full-fledged kinyan, we learned that there's a Misha Para, that you should not back out from a deal that you have, you should not back out from a deal that you had agreed to. And therefore, unless there's a valid reason to back out, you may not back out. He says the Gemara, V'mhayu sirsir b'neim, if there's a broker in between and the keli that they're using to measure, to pour in what they're selling is being put into the keli of the broker, Imma Yasirsa Bainayam, Nizbra Chavis, and this barrel broke, Nizbra Lasirsa. It was the Sirsa's Keli that it broke in. The halacha is that the Sirsa is the one that loses out because he becomes the owner of this wine or oil. And therefore, if they break it and the Sirsa cannot deliver it to the buyer, that's why he's going to be responsible to pay to the buyer. He's going to be responsible to pay to the seller the value of what happened here. As the Rashbam says, what happened is that by pouring the wine, the oil, into the keli of the sirser, it becomes his. And therefore, if the lekeach will not get what he's entitled to, and the moicher already gave away what he's selling, and that's why the sirser is held responsible. And the Rosh explains that why is this? So Rosh explains that the sirser is considered like a shayma sacher, and that even though we would suggest, says the Rosh, that it's a shayma sacher on the contents of what's being sold, but not on the actual keli, because the keli just here to have a way to make a sale, teaches us the Gemara that he's a shayma sacher even on the keli, and if the keli breaks, he's going to be held responsible. Moreover, explains the Rabbeinu Yoina, that we would think, and that's what the Mishnah's coming to teach us, that we would think that the Sirsa providing the keli, the Sirsa by providing the keli is not really giving something of his, is just giving a service, but his keli to help facilitate the sale, teaches us the Mishnah that it's not just that he's giving a keli because that's how he's helping facilitate the sale. His keli is kind of it until he delivers it to the lekeach. Now teaches us the Mishnah another halacha. The Mishnah teaches us that if somebody sells wine or oil to someone else, after he poured the wine or oil from the vessel, from where it's being poured out of, he has to add lahatav leishlosha tipin. He has to make sure after it stops pouring, he adds 3 drops that are on the bottom of the keli. And afterwards, kina, if the seller tilts this keli back, umitzes, and there's still some oil left on the bottom of the keli, harei shemaycher, it belongs to the seller. Because once the contents of what I'm buying have been poured into my vessel. And not only have they been poured into my vessel, but the extra drops, these extra drops have been poured into my vessel, what happens is I'm not focused on this anymore. I'm not thinking about this being mine anymore. And therefore, since I'm not thinking about this being mine anymore, if there is some left, it belongs to the seller. The chenvani, somebody who is a storekeeper, teaches us the Mishnah, and the Chayv Lahat of Shlosha Tibin, they don't have to add the 3 Tibin. So I saw 2 reasons. One reason, which the Rashbam suggests, is that the Chenvani is very busy, and for every customer that the Chenvani is going to have, he's going to have to start squeezing out these drops, pouring these extra drops, it's going to be very time-consuming. So Chazal did not require that a Chenvani should do that. The Meiri suggest that the Chenvani is selling this as profit, and apparently the profit margin of a Chenvani wasn't very significant. So in order that the Chenvani should make a decent profit, Chazal said that he keep 3 drops. Rav Yehuda says that even during the week, the Chenvani is obligated to leave these 3 drops. Erev Shabbos and Cheshecha, only Friday afternoon, where it's a very busy time, and again, using the Rashban Pshat, and the Chavani is particularly busy, and he doesn't have the time to start pouring these extra drops for every customer, then Potter, he's not going to have to give the extra drops. But all the other times, he has to. So I saw that the Mefarshim tried to understand, now Gemara keeps on speaking about the extra drops. And the question is, why do we have these extra drops, the 3 extra drops? So the Sefer Bris Shalom explains, the Gemara Masechta Menachos explains that the Pasuk says, Ki b'ka Hashem tzor olamim, says the Gemara Masechta Menachos Tavchav Tesam Abeis, Eil Shnei Olam Shebar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This refers to the two worlds that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. Olam Hazeh was created with a hay, and the Olam Haba was created with a yud. And Rashi explains, and Hachilek HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shmai, V'hitev Shloisha Tipen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sort of, as we could understand it, poured out three drops. U'ma'oisa Shloisha Tipen, from those three drops that HaKadosh Baruch Hu poured out from his name, Nasu Mayim, water, Eish, fire, V'aver, and air, V'chol Olam, that's what the world was created from. V'kein Kosef, B'Sefi Yetzirah. So according to this, he explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu used the three tipim to create the world. And we know that the Pasuk says that Olam Chesed Yibana, that the entire creation of the universe was really a chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, since it was a chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we, when we sell something to someone else, we have to demonstrate that same type of life, that we chesed, that we're generous, and we give the extra, as we've just been discussing, we'll discuss, the extra three tipin. And that comes from the three tipin from which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Ask the Gemara. We started the Mishnah that when you're pouring something, then till you finish pouring, it's the sellers. After you finish pouring, it's the buyers. So ask the Gemara, high meter demand. This vessel, which is being poured into, who was the owner of the vessel? Elam midel lekeich, we say it belongs to the buyer. So actually, midel lemoich, why does the Mishnah say that until the vessel is full, it belongs to the seller? But midel lekeichu, since it's being poured into the caliph shalekeich, it should be considered his. On the other hand, elam midel demoicher. So we'll say that the vessel belongs to the meicher. So ask the Gemara Mishnah Smalsa, Midah Lekeach. We learned that once it's filled up, it belongs to the buyer. But if it's the Midah the meicher, if it belongs to the seller, it should still remain his. Answers the Gemara, Amar Bilah, we're speaking about a case where it's Midah Sirser, that the vessel belongs to the broker, and the broker lets both of them use it. So until the Keli is filled up, he's lending it to the seller. And after the keli is filled up, he's lending it to the buyer. Ask the Gemara, how can we say that that's pshat of the first case of the Mishnah? But Midik Tani Sefer, let's continue learning the Mishnah. The Mishnah then, after the first case of the Mishnah, brought a new case. When the Mishnah said, Imhaya Sirsa B'Neim, Nishbar Achavas Nishbar Sirsa, Mechlal, the Reisha Labas Sirsa Reskinen. Because it was talking about a Sirsa, then why would I have to say, then what's the news, what's the second case coming to teach us? Says the Gemara, Reisha is speaking about the Mida, that the Keli belongs to the broker, B'lai Sirsa. But he, the broker, is not the one that's actually doing any pouring of it. And therefore, the Mishnah said that the Sirsa is responsible. But in a case where he is not involved, then the halacha is that he's not involved in pouring this. He's not responsible. Only when the sirsa, the sefer is sirsa atzmai. And as I saw the Rashbam explains, we would think that if it's the caliph shel sirsa, whether the sirsa is there or the sirsa is not there, it should not make any difference. Because he is, as soon as it's his caliph, he should be held responsible until the deal is finished. Teaches us the Mishnah that isn't the halacha. But rather, there's a difference if the sirsa is personally there, then he's going to be held responsible. Otherwise, he will not be held responsible. Herkino mitzvah sarei shalmeicher. Says the Gemara, Kisolik Rabbi Lozer, Ashkechel is Iri. Rabbi Lozer came from Bavotat to Israel, he met Iri. Amalei, Mi kan tana de asin the Rav Midas. Is there a tana here in Eretz Yisrael that learned this Mishnah that we're discussing about pouring and how much you have to pour? Achve, so Ziri said, this is the tana, this is the Rav that knows this halacha, Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi. He's very well versed in this halacha. Amalei, so Rav Yitzchak Bar Dimi says to Rav Elazar, obviously you have a difficulty with this Mishnah. My kakashalei, what's your question? The Tanan, we learned Hetsina Herkino Umitzis, we learned in the Mishnah that if the seller poured out everything he's supposed to pour out, and then he also gave, as we discussed, the three extra drops to the buyer, anything that's left in the bottom of the keli, Harei Shemaicher, as we explained, belongs to the seller. But ask the Gemara for Tanan, have we not learned a Mishnah Masechta Truma that if somebody is pouring out wine or oil, which is truma, from one barrel to another barrel, he has to pour out the three drops, and then whatever is left in the barrel, you could put in chulin there. Herkino amitza, but the Mishnah over there says that if after you did that, what's ever left at the bottom of the barrel, hareza truma. So we see that even though you did the herkino umitza, it doesn't make a difference. It's still hareza truma. It's still considered truma. But we said that after you did that, whatever is left belongs to the seller. Amalei ha'et malah amra bavua. There is a whole different consideration. There the consideration is mishum yish. In our Gemara, the buyer, after he got everything poured into his keli, and he also had the three drops, so what happens is, he no longer is, even if there's something left, he's miyash from it. But at this point, but in the case of Truma, he's not miyash. And therefore, since he's not miyash, therefore, it still is considered truma. So, of course, there are many questions that need to be understood. The first obvious question is that the Gemara, how do we understand the Gemara's question in the first place? Can't we understand that truma is not the same as when I'm selling something that belongs to me to you? And what is your expectation and what is not your expectation? To which the Rishonim explain that the Gemara in the Havamina is speaking about a situation where a person who is receiving it, the person who called the truma only meant that it should be truma as much as I could pour, and the rest should not be considered truma. So the Mishnah over here, the Gemara just quoted a Mishnah, that if he did herkina or mitzah, that means he poured it out, and then he did the three drops, he could use the container for chulin. But the Gemara says that Gemara quotes the Mishnah that if something accumulates on the bottom, then it's considered truma. So of course the question is very obvious. If we're saying that if anything accumulates on the bottom, the halacha treats it like truma, he should be forbidden to use that cup for chulin because there may be oil or wine accumulating on the bottom. And even though we have the shear bittel, because the shear bittel by truma is 100 to 1, so let's say that the contents of this cup are 100 times more than what is left on the bottom of the cup, but isn't there halacha of ein mevatel mesel chatchila? So to do so should be usur. So the Rash answers that when is there halacha of ein mevatel mesel chatchila? It says that the halacha of ein mevatel isser chatchila is only where somebody wants to be mevatel isser. For example, if somebody has a small amount of something which is usser, and instead of discarding it, he wants to be mevatel it, that's considered mevatel isser chatchila. Here, the person is not looking to mevatel the truma. He poured out as much truma from the cup as he could. He didn't want, halacha doesn't tell him that he has to wait to see if there will be more accumulate. So his goal of using the cup now is not to be mevatel any truma that's left there. That indeed would be considered bittul isser chatchila. That's not what he's trying to accomplish. That's why it's not considered bittul isser chatchila. The Ramban has a different approach. He says that if there's such a small amount of wine, oil left at the bottom, Chazal did not tell us that we have to be bothered to try to get rid of it. It's so minuscule. It's so minuscule that the halacha is that it's not considered significant that the Chazal should tell us that we have to take it out. And the way the Migdash David explains what the Rabban means, that it loses when it's such a small amount that, and I don't want to bother trying to get it out, the halacha is, says the Ramban, that it doesn't have the halacha of truma anymore when it's such a small amount. And in fact, the Ramban says is that it's nothing to do with bittel. And therefore he says, you could cook chulin in a pot in which truma was cooked after he rinses the pot with cold water. Even though we know that that isn't considered a proper kashering. And you can't normally use a pot, for example, that was used for non-kosher to cook in it kosher and rely on bittel. So why over here, if the pot was used to cook truma, and now you want to cook chulin in it and have Yisrael be able to eat that chulin, should kashering of the pot not be required? So says the Migdash David in explaining the Ramban. What the Ramban means to say is that Chazal said a special halacha by truma, and that when you have such a small amount of truma, it loses the status of truma. When you have just a small amount of truma that's left, which is absorbed in the pot, says the Ramban, that's not truma anymore. So if you cook something not kosher in the pot, so then indeed, the halacha is, you can't use that pot until you kasher it, because you have here an absorption of something that's not kosher. But in any other situation, the halacha is that it's not, by the truma, there's a new din, that it's not considered truma. Says, we learned in the Mishnah, v'chanvani en chayv lahatav. Then chanvani is not obligated to go through this process. Ibailhu. And then the Mishnah said, Rabbi Yehuda said that this halacha is an Erev Shabbos. Says the Gemara, we need to understand, Rabbi Yehuda Reisha Koi, is Rabbi Yehuda speaking about the Reisha. And the Reisha said that a regular person has to always add these three traps. And Lakula, and he's telling us that everybody doesn't have to do this on Friday afternoon. Or is Rabbi Yehuda referring to the Sefer? Where the Tanakhama said that we're lenient by Ed Chenvani, to which Rabbi Yehuda says, no, we're not. Tashma, says the Gemara of Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Erev Shabbos, Vekashecha, Chenvani Potter, Vneshech Dvani Torah. So as we learned the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda is speaking to the Chenvani, and saying that the special dispensation we give to the Chenvani is not all of the time, it's only Friday afternoon. Says the Mishnah, Hashaleach Esbenoi, if somebody sends his son who is still a cotton, Eitzel Chenvani, to the Chenvani, and he has a coin which is a punyan. And a punyan is equal to 2 iser. And he tells his son, buy oil equal to an iser, half of a pinion, and the storekeeper is going to give you change, an iser. Umadadloi the iser shemen, and the chenveni gave him an iser worth of oil, and he also gave him venosanloi as an iser, and he also gave him the iser change. Shavar as a tzluchis, and now when this boy is going home, he broke the cup or the jar in which this oil was, and v'ibedes iser, and he also lost the coin. And now, says the Mishnah, hanchvani chayiv, the chanvani is held responsible for the jar and the oil and the iser. Rabbi Yehuda says that he's potter, shemanas ken sholchai, the father sent the son with that intention, and since the father sent the son with that intention, the father took upon himself all the responsibility of what will happen if it breaks. That if the the tzluchus was never in the hands of the chenvani. It was always in the hands of the child. Umadat chenvani l'taycha, and then the chenvani poured the oil into that jar, chenvani potter. He's not going to be held responsible for the jar, because he never made a kinyan. He never put the jar into his hand. Since he never put the jar into his hand, he's not going to be held. He's not going to be held responsible for the jar. But the Rishonim point out that the nafkamina here is that he won't be held responsible for the jar, but he will be held responsible for the oil and for the money, because the oil and the money he actually had in his hand. The Paiskun discussed a situation where somebody sends a child to the store to buy something, and the storekeeper gives him what he was asked to buy, and he gave him change. And what's the halacha b'zman hazeh? And the child breaks and loses what he was given. So the Imri Yosha says that in Chelik Beis, Siman Kuf Yud Beis, that b'zman hazeh, where it became customary that people send their children to the store to buy, that then the halacha of our Mishnah is not applicable. The Imri Yosha says that the halacha of our Mishnah is only in a time and place where people did not send children to the store, and therefore the storekeeper should have never given the storekeeper, should have never given the child this jar and the oil and the money. But in the case where it's very common nowadays to do so, the storekeeper will not be held responsible. So says the Gemara. We speak about the Reisha, Bishlama, in the case where we have the Machloikus, Rabban Rabbi Yehuda, Bis V'Shemin, Ba'pligi. What is the Machloikus? The Rabbanan Tzavi L'Duy Shadri. The Rabbanan's opinion is that when the father sent the son to the Chenvani, all he meant was, that was the way he was going to communicate to him that I need this much oil, but not that you should send the oil with a child. Rehuda holds the Shadure Shadre. Of course, the Chevani has every right to understand that the father sent the child because he wants him to bring home the oil and the change. El Shavit Sluchas. But in the case where he broke the jug, why should the chenveni be chayiv? Aved midasi. The father gave the jar to the son, who obviously is still a child and doesn't know how to watch it properly. So obviously he gave him the jar. He gave him the empty jar. And therefore, since he gave him the empty jar, he's showing that he is allowing his son to carry it. And if it will break, it should be the father's responsibility. Why was it becoming the chenveni's responsibility? Our Mishnah speaking about the father is in the jar business, and he's selling this jar. He's sending this jar to the chenveni with the understanding that the chenveni should buy the jar. And now the chenveni took the jar from the boy. From this child, I'm Naslovakra, in order to inspect it. And this goes back to Allah of the Shmuel Sud. The Shama Shmuel, Hanoita Kli Mina Umin Am Naslovakra. If I go into a store, and we're going to be discussing this Allah now quite extensively, I take a Kali to examine it, to decide if I want to buy it or not. The Nenes Biyodai, and now it drops Chayiv. Because, explains the Rajban, since we're speaking here about a case where they had agreed on a price, so as soon as the person picks up that keli, the person picks up the keli in order to examine it, it's considered a situation where we had hagbah, and therefore it becomes his keli, and he's responsible. That's how we're going to explain our Mishnah. The father who sells jars sent this jar to the chenveni, for the chenveni to buy this jar, and the moment he picks up the jar, he becomes responsible. And therefore, he has no right to give it back to the child, because he has no right to give it to the child, because How could you give a how could you give something to a child? A child is not a responsible individual. Rabbi Yehuda says that's the opinion of the Tanna Kamma. That's going to be the opinion of Rabbanan like Shmuel, and the Rabbanan obviously, Rabbi Yehuda obviously doesn't agree with Shmuel. So says the Gemara immediately. So it turns out, Lame the Shmuel Tanaihi, that what Shmuel is teaching us is really a machlokes Tanoim. Ella Rava Rav Yosef Dam Tavayu. With the, just the opposite. The chenveni is somebody who sells jars. And the father never sent a jar to the chenveni. On the contrary, the father gave money to the child to buy oil, to buy a jar full of oil. And now, that's what the chenveni gave the child. And we can't therefore say that the father an aveda midas. Vazer Rabbi Yehuda tamei, Rabbanan tamayu. Everybody's following their opinion. Rabbi Yehuda says that the father who sent the son was an aveda midas. The father gave permission that the son should take it. Since the father gave permission that the son should take it, so then for the chevani will not be held responsible. And the other hand, in the Rabbanan hold that all the father meant to do was notify the chenveni that I need oil, but not his intention was not that the father that he should give a jar to the child. The father realizes that the child is not able to take the jar. Ask the Gemara if that's the way we're understanding the Mishnah. But says the Gemara, according to Rabbanon, that if the chenveni never took this jar into his hand, that the halacha will be that the chenveni will not be held responsible for the jar. But ask the Gemara, if we're explaining that our Mishnah is speaking about a case where the entire point of this Mishnah is just that the father should have a way of communicating to the chenveni that he wants oil, but not that he ever intended that the child should be one carrying the jar with the oil. So why should it make a difference if the chenveni never took the jar into his hand? We learned in our Gemara the concept of aveda midas. Rabbi Yehuda says that if somebody sends his child with a jar, then he is going to be held responsible because he knew what he was doing, and he took that risk. The Torah HaKadosh says, "Loisamen al dam reyecha," and Chazal explained, there's a mitzvah to say of Hashivoy Seloi, that just like we have a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, so too we have an obligation of saving a person's life. If there's a din that we have to try to return a person a physical item that he lost, certainly we have to take care that if a person's life is in danger, we have to do whatever we can to save it. As Rashi says, Hoshev es haguf latzmoy. Now, if somebody, what's going to be an halacha if somebody is in a bad situation and somebody else did not save him? Did the person who didn't try to save him, is he over an iser? We learned in our Gemara that there's a case of aveda midas. Aveda midas means that if I deliberately did not care about this, so then it's called an aveda midas. So if I didn't care about myself, so maybe it's considered an aveda midas, and if I therefore am in such a place, the person who doesn't attempt to save me is not doing an iser. So the achronim say there's a difference when we speak about an aveda of a moment. Our Gemara, where I sent a jar with a child, which is considered aveda midas, versus when it comes to my life, because the Rambam says nefesh ha'adam. The Rambam is in Hilchos Ritzeich u'Shmiras Nefesh, Perek Aleph Halacha Dalet. Says the Rambam nefesh ha'adam ene kinyonei aproti ki im kinyonei shal Hakadosh Baruch Hu shebaroi. As so. Says the Ratvaz, you could have a concept, as we're learning in our shiur, of aveda midas. And what does aveda midas mean? That something I own,
and I'm not, and I don't care about it. I'm letting it go to waste. But says the Ratvaz that you could only say Aveda Midas on something that you own. Something you don't own yourself, we can't say Aveda Midas. So on a jar that I own, we say Aveda Midas. We don't say Aveda Midas on our lives because we don't own our lives. And therefore, we can't be, it's not ours to give up on.